Previously on the Dating After Divorce Survival Guide.
Hello? Hello, internets? Hello? Hello? Are you ready? Hello, internets. I'm trying to do something here. Is anybody listening? I can't really tell because I'm in a room by myself with a microphone.
I decided right then and there that as a human being that existed for 28 years with no foreknowledge of this woman, that I somehow was going to love this woman's issues away. The thing that I just really could not understand is that she just didn't want to be married anymore. You can't make anybody do anything that they don't want to do. You just can't.
But when she walked away from that table, I realized that I had done more than just hurt someone. I hurt a friend.
A year and a half after my divorce, the question of why I came up. Why? Why do I feel as if I'm failing? Why am I doing the things that I'm doing? Nothing is working. I don't seem to be doing anything correctly.
Gray wolves move and hunt, mostly at night. They chase, seize, and pull their prey to the ground.
But the beautiful thing about having a legion of black women, to put it better and to put it more accurately, is they have your back, they hold you down, and they give you insight into the mind of a woman. And they neutralized her. She was gorgeous. I mean, she was drop-dead gorgeous. She was the color of oil. Her skin radiated. I mean, she just drank up the light all around her and radiated it back out. She was glowing.
It's amazing how just a simple tweak in your attitude, a simple tweak in your perspective, just changes everything. I became more personable, more affable, more direct. When I stopped wanting and was just going for, lack of a better word, sex. But it wasn't all roses. I had a hunger. I was insatiable. The more women I met, the more women I wanted to meet. The more women I had, the more women I wanted to have. I was getting bolder and more brazen with my approaches. And she said, "Eric, you're a hoe. I didn't tell you to be a hoe. I didn't suggest that you be a hoe. I said, have fun. I said, don't take any of these dating situations too seriously. I didn't say do all this. You sound like a straight up hoe."
Man, really? So when I'm slanging and banging and feeling empty, it's all good. When I'm trying to like be respectful and understanding and just talking to a person for who they are, it ain't enough. What am I supposed to do?
This is just never gonna work. I'm never gonna figure it out. Like I'm never, like nothing is ever going to work. And I get a text message. And it was like, "Hey, Eric, I'm in San Francisco on business for a week. You wanna come out and join me?" And over her shoulder was the Statue of Liberty. And then she panted in my ear, "I wasn't sure what to expect when you got here, but as soon as I saw you, I wanted you to bend me over my couch." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, how about I just press you up against this glass?" I rush out into the madness, that soul-stirring sadness we call the world today, and I found it raining. As the world washes down, will we ever discover how beautiful this place really could be if you just be you and I'd simply be me?
"Hey, listen, I really like you. I really like you. And I'd like for this to turn into something more than what it is, but you have a man, you have a husband, you have somebody that you go home to every day." You know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, how do I keep ending up in these situations? Me feeling like I never had enough and never was enough in the life of my ex-wife. I for damn sure wasn't gonna repeat that willingly and walk into a space that didn't have my name on it.
"Hey, what's going on? Listen, I can't really understand, since I wasn't there, what happened in Paris, but what I do know is that I didn't really have anything to do with what went wrong. I read your WhatsApp and all the crazy stuff."
Nope, don't want to say that. Let me change that.
"All the stuff you said, and look, I don't want to do this anymore with you. You are a keyboard gangster. You hide behind the keyboard and say whatever you want.
Nope, nope, nope. Don't want to say. I need to change that. No, that's not going to go over well.
Since you seem to be okay with saying whatever you want, whether it's true or not, behind the keyboard, but then don't want to ever have any face-to-face conversations and never want to hash things out with me, I don't know why you feel the way that you do, but I'm no longer interested in changing it. So what I'm going to do is do what's best for me and what's most healthy for me, and this will be my last text message to you for the foreseeable future. Moving forward, I'm going to email you all of baby girl stuff for school whenever you need to be pulled in on any information regarding that and anything that has to do with doctor visits and anything else kid related. But outside of that, there really isn't anything that you and I need to be discussing at this point. I will probably pick the same day each week to email you, probably Thursday or Friday. That way it gives you a heads up going into the weekend should anything need to happen. And I'm going to just do this. I will not be texting you. I will not be calling you. I will not be responding to your text, and I will not be picking up the phone when you call. Let me see. If this goes okay and we seem to be able to communicate decently via email, then we can revisit this in a year in January of 2020. Hope all is well. Have a great year. And how did we get to this magical place of being done? Where did we get the cojones to be done? Not emotionally, but rationally done. Because there's a difference. You can be angry and done. I'm done! Or you can just simply be done and move on with your life. How do we get there? How did I get there? Let's roll the tape back a month.
Welcome to the Dating After Divorce Survival Guide. After getting his master's degree in getting cursed out, his second master's in getting kicked out, Eric Payne decided to pursue his doctorate in getting his life right and staying in his own lane. But upon getting all his degrees, he realized he was a fish out of water in this new dating landscape. Eric was 28 years old when he met his ex-wife and was newly divorced at 43. The world had changed considerably since the days of StarTAC beepers, Motorola flip phones, and Yahoo chat. It is vicious out here in these new streets where taking pictures of yourself all day long with a phone and posting them on the internet is actually a thing. The Dating After Divorce Survival Guide is the story of Eric's journey from love and marriage to divorce to dating to hopefully love and marriage once more.
Christmas time 2018. I was sad, low-key mad, but mostly sad. My kids were going to Paris without me. They were going with their mom, and she had even offered me the opportunity to go with her. I wasn't sure if she was going with anybody else, and I'm not going to say that that so much factored into my decision to say no. I think my decision to say no just factored into the fact that I didn't want it. I didn't want to be in the same space. We were no longer the same people that we were when we were together. And spending time together as new beings, after having done that a couple of times, I realized that I had an expiry on the experience. So, you know, a couple hours, a few hours, but nothing more than a few hours. Days on end, you know, whatever. And I was still between things. And I remember the offer being, hey, you know, I'll spot you for the flight or I'll spot you for whatever. It was just one of those things where I felt like if I said yes, I mean, I wouldn't have said yes anyway, because I think my pride at the time was too strong. But if I had said yes, I was concerned that I'd hear about it later when during a not so pretty moment between us, which were becoming more and more few and far between, but they were happening nonetheless. And I didn't want to hear that someone had bought me a trip to Paris when that just wasn't something that I wanted to do. I wanted to buy my own trip to Paris. I said, maybe I'll go there and just get my own spot and meet up with them for breakfast or whatever. But time ticked, months passed, and that didn't happen either. So here we are at Christmas. I don't have a flight to Paris. I don't have a room in Paris. It's not going to happen. And they're going to Paris. Initially, I thought they were leaving on Christmas Day. I was devastated because opening up the gifts and so on and so forth was just something that I wanted to do. And I might have been low-key jealous. I'm not going to lie. That's a fly thing to do. But I had my dates wrong. And as a result of that, I didn't really put too much of an effort into the tree. I'm big on the trees, as tall as they can be for my space and as decorated as they can be. But since I knew that my kids weren't going to be there on Christmas, or so I thought, I got a 6-foot-tall tree. I mean, I can look eye to eye with a 6-foot-tall tree. Then I found out they were leaving the day after Christmas. And I was like, well, still, I don't want to be looking at some over-decorated tree. Well, not even over-decorated tree. I don't want to be looking at some decorated tree and not have my children to spend that time with. So the 6-foot tree stayed and I didn't upgrade. The day came and I got all this food. The one thing that I looked forward to, even with mixed company, was having everyone over for Christmas and cooking, whether it was a collective cooking effort or what, but just having food everywhere, lots of ice cream, lots of pie. That's my thing. And then the day of, I found out, day of being Christmas, I found out that they were leaving at 8 o'clock on Christmas Day. Why? Because my ex read the dates wrong. I was too sad to be angry. I was too caught off guard to be exasperated. I kind of just let it happen in front of me. And I looked at all this food and said to myself, well, what am I going to do with all this food? We opened our gifts. We had a good time. We ate breakfast, which was more like brunch. And then all the food that had been in the oven for dinner stayed in the oven. I also think I spilled a cake, if I remember correctly. A cake wasn't done, a pound cake, and I touched it too soon, and it bubbled out and just went all over the bottom of my stove. So that was Christmas dinner, and I was pretty daggone sad. I love my kids. I love Christmas. I had Snoopy outside. I had the tree lit up. I had the Christmas music playing, the Jackson 5 thing going. I had the stockings full. We all exchanged gifts. But there's something to be said, you know, especially since everybody's getting older at this point, meaning the kids. There's something to be said about having them, not even hanging out with them, but just hearing them enjoying their gifts. Now, I'm not talking about my son. My son was out with whatever girl or whatever homie as soon as, you know, he woke up from his nap after eating. This time, everybody was gone. So they said their goodbyes early because they had this early evening flight to Paris, which was going to be a long flight for them. My daughter's bags had already been packed. There was no issue with that. Like, mom had packed the bags over at her house. Now, this was a trip that was fraught with drama because, first and foremost, it was happening on Christmas, which was a day that was supposed to be reserved for giving gifts. But then I found out it wasn't happening on Christmas. And then it was supposed to be a surprise for my daughter. But then 2 days before the trip, one of her family members on her mom's side gave up the information that they were going to Paris. Then my daughter was upset because she would have liked to have been surprised. And then she said something that may have bordered on being disrespectful to that family member upon being surprised or told, or the cat being leaked out of the bag. So then a fight broke out with on their side between my ex, my daughter, the other family member. And at the end of the day, I said, well, you know, that aside, her Christmas with you has technically been spoiled. She didn't like the fact that I didn't necessarily side with her on that, but I didn't not side with her. My thing is, like, the argument happened over at your house. You handle it. I don't know what to tell you. I always am telling our daughter to behave, be nice, be respectful, be kind, blah, blah, blah. But what am I supposed to do if I'm physically not there after I've already said something? I don't know what I was supposed to do. I don't know if I was supposed to sound more, you know, incensed or whatever, but I wasn't. Because I was too busy being caught up in the fact that I was about to not be spending the Christmas holiday season with my children. When they were gone, I was sad. I was sad and I was downcast. I walked my house repeatedly. It was cavernous. My house is not cavernous. But without the sounds of children, laughter, electronics going on and off, I mean, yeah, I had the TV on, but without the sounds of children, my house had an emptiness to it, a size that I had previously not been aware of. It seemed like there were more walls. I was just pacing around the house, looking at stuff, staring at the walls, looking at the ceiling, looking at the recessed lighting, looking at my floors, cleaning a lot, cleaning probably to pass the time. Talking to my parents, my mother asked me incessantly how the kids were doing in Paris, not understanding that, one, I didn't exactly know because they were in a completely different time zone and they were doing plenty of things, and two, I wanted to know that they were safe, but I didn't necessarily want to talk about the experience. I was sad, low-key jealous, but not really mad. Because at the end of the day, my children were going to experience Paris. It was going to be great. They were going to have a blast. And they would grow from the experience. And it would be something that between them and their mom, they would always have, and it would be memorable. Or so I thought. A couple days into the trip, I'm getting text messages from overseas. Text messages from my child saying that she's not having a good time, saying that she's arguing with her mother. I reach out to my son and I say, "What's going on?" And he's like, "Dad, I can't even deal with these two. All they're doing is arguing." I get another text message that my child is lost in the Louvre. The Louvre. The Louvre in Paris. The Jay-Z and Beyonce Louvre. The Mona Lisa Louvre. I don't know where anybody is, and I'm in the Louvre, and no one's answering their phones. And I look at my phone, and I look at my empty house, and I look for the audience, because there is no audience. Audience. I look around, wondering, is something wrong with me? I'm home in Atlanta, Georgia, sad, alone, and low-key jealous that I didn't go to Paris with my children. And my child is lost in the Louvre?
What?
I reach out to my ex and I just screenshot the message. And I said, "I'm in Atlanta." And I went on about my business. For the life of me, I just did not understand why so much was happening on what was supposed to be a good trip. And I didn't understand why I was being involved when I wasn't there. Now, I've since learned why I am involved with things that don't involve me. But at the time, I totally didn't understand why that was. But it didn't end there. Then I started getting text messages from my ex's sister, my daughter's aunt, talking about how ungrateful my daughter is for giving her mother a hard time during the trip to Paris. Didn't know what was going on. Again, what am I supposed to do? I'm in Atlanta, in my house, by myself. Not too long after I got that text message from her sister, my daughter sends me an entire screenshot from my ex-wife. Something that was supposed to be sent to her sister, she sent to her daughter instead. And in it, she was railing against our child. She was actually railing against both of our children because one was giving her the business, my daughter, and the other one was hanging out, meeting people, and disappearing at different times. He's the one that left my daughter in the Louvre. He actually had been offered a modeling contract while he was sitting on a park bench, apparently. And you know, it was a private communication. It didn't involve me until it did. So as I'm continuing to read, to give my daughter some perspective and to not take things personal and to just try to like enjoy Paris. I don't know what's going on because again, I'm in Atlanta. I scroll down to an entire section that's dedicated to me. My child is entitled and she's entitled because of me. She believes she should have this and should have that because of me. I'm the one that gave her the mouth that she has. I'm the one that has her not appreciative of anything. I look at her words and I was like, this is absolutely insane. I am not even there and it's still my fault. I am not even there and it's still my fault. So I screenshot the screenshot and then I send the screenshot to her sister and I said, stop texting me.
Your problem is with the adult. They cannot handle her children. Do not text me anymore.
So, of course, that didn't go over well. Don't threaten me. Don't speak to me like that. Don't da-da-da-da.
So I went back and forth with her for a minute. And I was trying to polite my way out of it, but I was being real petty and real salty with my politeness. And she saw through that. And I kind of looked at the messages as they were coming in and how I was becoming the focal point of something that was happening on another continent. And I thought to myself, I said, I don't have to participate. Why am I participating? Like, what is this?
So I blocked her. It was real simple.
And I waited a couple days to sit on the message that I received about myself before I responded to my ex. When I finally got around to it, my response was, I don't understand why this is happening. And I'm sorry that it's happening. Like, legitimately, I'm sorry this is happening. I don't want this to happen to you. But you'll hold it down. You never hear from me when I have the kids. We're not together anymore. And yes, we're supposed to partner on certain things, but I'm not supposed to be helping you through every single thing that happens in your universe. I mean, that's what happens when you decide to step off and do your own thing. I understood that. Matter of fact, I was told that, you know, I was told on more than one occasion that we're not together anymore. So why doesn't the same apply? And I guess that's the thing, right? Equitable treatment, equitable treatment, equitable treatment, and equitable treatment typically does not exist in acerbic, derisive, and defensive divorce situations, which was the situation that I was in. It was good when it was good, which meant that as long as I was behaving, it was fine. But the second that something went wrong and the second that I wasn't willing to help out, then I was the bad guy. And it just got old all of a sudden. So I said something I had never said, knowing that I was taking a risk. I said, we're not together anymore. I'm getting used to this. Please leave me alone. Please stop including me in your affairs. Let me go. Stop making me your scapegoat and let me go. I knew there was a risk in saying this. I wasn't calling her parenting into question. I was calling always including me as a scapegoat into question, which meant that you need to handle yours, which I guess was calling her parenting into question. And so I sent that off to her with the screenshot. It wasn't until they were back in town from Paris in the beginning of the new year, and it wasn't until my child was back over by my house that I got a response from my ex. She didn't say, oh, you know, I was upset or I was in the moment or da-da-da-da. She basically was like, if the shoe fits. She went on to turn the screws on me and then retaliate for what I had said about her handling things. She didn't respond to that part. She leapfrogged over that and then went in for the kill. Trust, I let you go. Trust, I let you go. When I divorced you, I let you go. Trust. Like, I came for her. I came for her, and she knocked it right back in my court. Because, you know, when you're having an argument with someone, you get in where you fit in. You find openings. You hit where you think that it's going to hurt somebody else. So I definitely blew a hole in her chest. So she threw one back at me and said, trust, I let you go when I divorced you. Like, she ain't never said nothing so, like, intentional. You know, things didn't work out. You know, this is blah, blah. I mean, like, you know, after the initial War of the Roses that we went through when we first got divorced, there was never anything that was, like, ever so intentionally lobbed in my direction like that. I looked at that message and I laughed and I didn't respond. Something inside of me told me not to respond in the moment because there was nothing in the moment that was going to advance the conversation. There was nothing in the moment that was going to, like, be productive. And there was nothing that I could say to change her feelings about me. Ding, da ding, ding, ding. There was nothing I could do to change her feelings about me. So in essence, screw it. That is what I had been wanting the entire time I knew her. And especially after we got divorced, I was trying to change how she felt about me. And I have no control over that.
None of us have any control over what others think of us. So all of this required a check-in with my man. My man who, like me, has a daughter. My man who, like me, is no longer with his daughter's mother. The difference between he and I is that he was never married to his daughter's mother. He is now remarried. He's now married. And I'm still divorced, as everyone knows. But we go back all the way to freshman year, and I've mentioned him throughout this podcast. As a matter of fact, he is one of the inspirations for this podcast. So shit had gotten so crazy, and I have to use that term, that I had to reach out to him and get my temperature check, as I do for most of the people that either mentor, guide, or keep me in check. So I tell him the story of Paris, and he just listened quietly, said that he knew how I felt, and he understood, and he was sorry that it happened. And then the more we talked, the more I began to like unfold and unpack all of this. I said, and here's the other thing, brother. I don't know if I said it like that, but I'll say it like that here. I said, here's the other thing, brother. I said, I finally get it. Like, I really get it. I said, brother, man, that is the best thing she could have ever done or said. She called herself giving me a dig, but she in essence set me free. I was doing things still as a divorced man, thinking, more so hoping, that if I came correct, when push came to shove, when the chips were down, when life reared its ugly head, when misunderstandings arose, my ex-wife would show me the same courtesy. And she had proven time and time and time and time and time again that she absolutely would not. Whether that was desire or capacity, it didn't matter. Desire meaning whether she truthfully desired to be that way towards me or whether she was just simply incapable of doing any better. It didn't matter. The result was the same. And I was suddenly free. I was like, wow, so this is all I'm going to get no matter what. Okay. So I don't have to like interact with this woman with the hope that things will get any better than they are right now. I can just do what I need to do, say what I need to say, and live my life without any expectation that she will ever meet me where I want to be met. As crazy as that sounds, it set me free. And I think that many times when we argue with people that we have been intimate with, are in relationship with, we expect and demand better based on who we are and what we do for them. Why? If someone's demonstrating who they are, again, whether that be desire or capacity, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to fight with them to be different? They are literally demonstrating who they are. They are showing you who you are in their eyes. Don't try to change the narrative that they have unless it's in a situation where there's a misunderstanding and that person genuinely wants to come to some sort of resolution with you. But if this is just how they flow towards you, if this is just what they do when it comes to you, you've been given a gift, the gift of understanding where you stand with someone. So then your goal, and I may have said this in the past, but your goal from this point forward is no longer about correction. Now it's about self-protection. So don't waste your time trying to correct somebody on what they should be feeling or thinking about you. I mean, at the end of the day, are they paying your rent? Are they having sex with you? Are they cooking your food? This woman, I shared a child with her and nothing more. Nothing more. Whatever we had, we had. We did not anymore. So it didn't matter. Why am I trying to change the opinion of someone who has absolutely no influence on my life? Someone who is not, thankfully, able to change the opinion of my child of me or my children of me. Not that she was. I'm just saying, like, you know, I know that there's some instances where that does happen. The attempts are made. But if this woman literally has no role in my life, and for anyone listening, whoever that person is in your life, if they have no role in who you are and how you are and what you do, they don't pay a single bill. If anything, they're taking money from you. If you know who you are and you believe in who you are and you believe in what you're doing and you know what you're doing, you know, who really knows? But if you truly value yourself, then that intrinsic value, it exists when the world hates you. So with that in mind, you don't owe anybody anything. Or as they like to say down here in Atlanta, or maybe it's the South,
you don't owe anybody dust. And after bearing my soul to my best friend, he said, my brother, you are much better than me because you are finding out at how old is she? I said, 13. You are finding out at 13 what it took me almost 18 years to discover. So you're ahead of the game. And we both laughed, got off the phone, and moved on with our respective days. And a couple days after that, I sent my ex-wife a not-so-short text detailing how I would communicate with her and how I desired to be communicated with. Whether it was honored or not, didn't really care, because I was definitely intending on holding up my end of the bargain. And that's what you have to do when you set boundaries. If you're setting them, then you've got to honor them and let the universe do the rest. After all the dust settled, I looked around my life and took stock of everything that happened. And I wondered, would this have gone down this way had I had a partner? Would a woman that was in my life have even stood for any of this to happen? Probably not. But I was alone. And I had been alone for all of 2018, after I had declared myself a king, while standing on the rooftop green space of a high school. Not necessarily without company, but ultimately alone. The story on that begins with the very next episode. This has been the first episode of Season 4 of the Dating After Divorce Survival Guide. If you've enjoyed what you listened to, please share with a couple of friends. Let them know what I'm trying to do, which is basically just empower people that have gone through similar situations of loss, despair, and tell my story to let you know that you can bounce back, you can get better, you can get real good, and you can start life brand new. I was blessed with a second chance. I don't think it has to be a blessing. I don't think it has to be magic. I think that you can actually work to have a second chance. It doesn't have to be the luck of the draw. And I want that for those of you who are listening and feel like you can't see your way out of this loss of another person, this loss of family, this betrayal, whatever it may be. So if you want to share with a couple of friends, I'd greatly appreciate it. And also check out the soundtrack. I'm going to leave the link in the comments below so that you can check out the Spotify soundtrack for the podcast. And that's going to grow. I've tried a couple different iterations of it, but that's going to grow every episode into something hopefully really enjoyable. And music makes my heart glad. So I'd like to help you make your heart glad as well. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you the next time.